You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. It is the middle of the night. We have brown liquor in our cups. It's down to four. And the Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs, this is simultaneously what I live for and what I dread. Being here with you in the middle of the night talking about soccer, being here with you in the middle of the night, period. So cheers, boys, to yet another night, the fourth night of the playoffs. A great night it was. El Trafico, Atlanta United. Somebody take over for me so I can take a sip.
WrestleMania, Carlos Vela, Dio. Will Ferrell start chanting Captain Morgan?
Get out? No, it wasn't get out. What was
get
it?
Lost.
Get lost.
Get lost, Weeby.
Oh, get yeah. lost. Bob Bradley not feeling the post-game questioning from Sebastian Salazar.
Lantan going nuts at the end on his way out.
Yes. Well done.
End show now. Doyle.
Kick
now.
These guys out. Apparently, kick these guys out.
Apparently the SportsCenter anchor said Carlos Vela's in his own galaxy.
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty
not bad.
Good.
Not
We're
bad at all.
Stuart Scott Street.
It occurred to me that the Final Four is one team that won the Supporters Shield this year and set the record for points. We know that team. It's LAFC. They finally got over the hump. Their sixth opportunity against the Galaxy and a win. Finally. Mm-hmm. Finally. You could tell what it meant to Bob Bradley. He was glowing in a Bob Bradley way in his post-game interview until he got a little bit frustrated by the Carlos Vela questioning. And then you have the 2016 champions, Seattle Sounders, the 2017 champions, Toronto FC, and the 2018 champions, Atlanta United. So the cream of the crop has risen. And it's the teams that have been here before. It's the teams that have done it before. It's the teams that have figured out this format and have more talent, I think, than the others. When you see this field, what are your takeaways?
I think a lot of what you just said, which is one, the format has led to what we wanted, which is the teams that played better in the regular season have earned their places and they've deserved to have home field advantage. It's worked for them. What you said, which was experience has mattered in these moments. I think the big one here was LAFC was the last team that hadn't had a lot of experiences. And this game clearly was, this is what happened to us against the Galaxy in the past. We believe we still should have won. And they fought through that and got there in this playoff game. And then on top of that, as much as I love what the Philadelphia Union did this year and some of the other teams, match winners are match winners. And these are big games, and those are the players that show up.
They played their two games in the playoffs without their top three leading scorers on the season in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. No Kasper Schebilko. Elsinho, of course, is Elsinho, so he comes off the bench. Marco Fabian is the other. We don't think he'll be back. Before we dig in, before we get down and dirty, talk Zlatan, maybe his final game. Nick Raimondo, certainly his final game.
I don't know, man.
You don't think so?
It didn't. It felt really sad to the point where it was like, maybe I just won't do this. That's what it looked like to me.
He said he was going to take his kids to school and then have a couple whiskeys. And I was like, day whiskeys? Cheers to you, Nick Raimondo. Attaway, attaboy. By the way, if you're not 21, don't drink any adult beverages ever. Mm. That's just a warning.
Just a lesson for life.
Wow. Yeah,
okay.
That's how it's going to be. That's my dad voice coming out on you. All right?
Just
keep people in line. Keep them in check. You know what? Let's just get at it. Let's talk El Trafico. 2-0 LAFC, and you're like, oh, they're going to do it. That's it. 2-2 LA Galaxy, and Tyler Miller having one go through the five hole that wasn't even a very good shot. And you're thinking, oh, it's El Trafico. That's what this game is about. It's going to be wild. 5-3 finish. Adama Diamande, who hasn't been with this team for their last four games, comes back, scores the two goals that win it for LAFC. This game had crazy buildup. It had $1,000 ticket prices that were only seemingly rising. Everybody in Los Angeles wanted to be there. The hype was out of control. People were saying, is this the biggest game in MLS history about a conference semifinal? It wasn't the biggest game in MLS history, by the way, but it was maybe the most anticipated.
I think that's the biggest playoff game I've ever seen. Yeah, I've been watching this game from day one. I think the only games that have been bigger than this are MLS Cups.
You're telling me when Charlie Joseph faced off against Eddie Gavin at Giant Stadium,
It was huge. It's the best MLS team we've ever seen. LAFC are the best MLS team we've ever seen. Zlatan is probably the second biggest name behind David Beckham who's ever played in MLS, and probably the best player other than Henri, Kaká. I would probably say Zlatan is the best player who's ever played in MLS for the most successful team in MLS, playing at this gorgeous stadium with like the crowd, the atmosphere, it comes through. Like this was
With Los Angeles, a city just enraptured.
Yeah.
Aflame.
You said it. I mean, like the Clippers played tonight and it.
Last night, I believe.
No, they played tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, last back night to back. Now.
They played in San Fran.
Was it in San Francisco? Oh, that's right, because the Warriors opened it. But anyway, the Lakers Clippers game.
On Tuesday night.
It was cheaper to get into that than it was to get into this game. It broke through into the mainstream consciousness of.
And that's LeBron and Kawhi.
Yeah. And like.
And Pat Beverly.
And Pat Beverly. Exactly. Don't forget Pat Bev and Alex Caruso for the bald guy.
Yeah, Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso needs to take Leanne's advice.
But the point is that like this broke through in a way that I don't think we've seen. I think maybe the 2014 Western Conference Championship, which was Landon's last year, Landon's Galaxy, and that great Galaxy team versus Dempsey's great Supporters Shield winning Seattle Sounders team. Like that was probably the previous one. If not that, then last year Red Bull versus Atlanta, because Atlanta were bigger than MLS in their way. And the Red Bulls were better than them, and it was this great rivalry. Two of the best teams of all. This was bigger than that. It absolutely was, and it delivered in like a really bizarre way because LAFC played nothing like what LAFC have played like all year. They're like, oh, you have 60% of the ball. Come on up, we're gonna counterattack you. They didn't do that. They pressed everyone. They tried to have 75-85% of the ball every single time out, and like that team did not exist tonight. They did, like, Bob Bradley did the Tata Martino thing. He said, okay, I know how I win in the regular season. I know how I'm going to win in the postseason.
Good football. Still yeah. played it.
It was, no, it was still pretty.
Yeah,
they scored some gorgeous goals. They had one goal that they didn't score that I'll hate Diego Rossi forever for not finishing that one. The one with it was the Trivella. Rabona to the back heel by Lee Wynn to the like weak shot right at the – come on, Diego.
And you're just sitting there waiting, hoping. I mean, there were great goals in this game that were scored.
Yeah.
Diamande, choo-choo, Mr.
–
like. I think you said OG Ronaldo. It was like, you know, it was Messi. It was Maradona. It was, I'm going to put my head down and just run past everyone and then class finish. This game really did have everything. I just wish it had another Galaxy goal. I wish it had that moment where it was one
goal.
Didn't
have Galaxy fullbacks. 5-4.
Yeah,
well, everything except two fullbacks for the Galaxy.
Those have been missing for a while now.
Center backs weren't really there either. it was a equal share across the back line for this Galaxy team. For Bob, he knew his team. You can go in there against this LA Galaxy team. You don't need numbers to create chances, right? Why push numbers forward? Why play high? Because you know individually what Diamande showed us. What Rossi showed us was they were better individually than these LA Galaxy defenders. You didn't need a crazy game plan. You could drop numbers in, protect yourself a little bit, and you knew your front three could create chances against this team, and then eventually Lee Wynn and Latif Blessing can get involved and get late runs into the box or into the area. Obviously, Eddie Segura just breaking lines from central midfield because everyone on LAFC can do everything. It seems like you've got center backs playing center mid and wingers playing center mid as well, and it made sense to me that for Bob Bradley, you watched the tape and said, every time we play this team, well, I'm not going to say that. Most of the time we play this team, we're better, and we should have won. Mm-hmm. And they watched the tape and say, everything we did was right. We just didn't finish as many chances as we had to. So why go crazy? Why change everything for this one? I think for him, it was just at some point, my guys mentally have to pick themselves up and say, We're not going to get down when we give up a goal to Zlatan because he will score a goal. We're just going to continue to play our style and we will finish the chances.
But they didn't play their style. That's the thing. Like they actually Bob Bradley said it afterwards in the presser. He's like, we didn't play our best football. It was not even close to it. And like, I agree. I think they actually played better last time these two teams met.
But belief to pass out of pressure, belief to find guys at all times, belief to run at guys even if maybe it's not a good transition.
So you just feel like it was LAFC dropped their line a little bit and then played more vertical.
Yeah.
It wasn't a complete sort of 180 away from their
principles. And also it's principles and philosophy versus tactics, right?
Yeah.
It was still the team that Bob's put out there for the last 2 years.
Talk that way. I'm drinking.
Believing while they believe in what they can do. Just changed where the shape came from and how they went about it. But it was still the same team.
This is the monkey off their backs. It was the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. It was five games of failure, frankly. And it was an opportunity for the LA Galaxy. And you could feel it in the way their fans approached this game. Sort of gleefully, sort of like, oh, we're going to do it again. We're going to spoil it. And then we're going to talk a lot of trash about it. How did this change the rivalry? Because we know how it changed the playoffs. I mean, LAFC are marching on. They don't seem to have some of the weaknesses that we were picking out in the days leading up because they had the break, because they didn't have Dio, because Walker Zimmerman looked like he got knocked out on decision day, because Mark Anthony Kay was not in the 18 and not available and maybe will be next week. What does this mean in Los Angeles, do you think, for this rivalry, for just the club, to get the monkey off the back to say, okay, this narrative, it's dead and gone. The Galaxy, they were our boogeyman.
It ain't gone yet.
Not gone yet?
Got to win that title. If they don't win MLS Cup, Galaxy fans are going to act like they're the ones who knocked LAFC out of the playoffs.
That's just fair.
Yeah, I mean, and that's...
That is fair.
That's the right you have.
They'll put their hand up and they'll spread their fingers out and they'll say five.
There you go.
They'll say five. That's how many we have.
I think it's tilting towards LAFC, but like they still have at least 180 minutes of... Well, maybe not. They got to do for Seattle, and then they got to do what they do in MLS Cup. I think if they win that, then it changes things, especially because... And this was something I talked about on Match Day Central. Systemically, culturally, it feels like there's something wrong with the Galaxy. Like, you gave up five goals to LAFC in the playoffs. Like, that's brutal. But you gave up four goals to Houston on decision. You gave up four at home to Vancouver, who hadn't scored four goals since May. Zlatan was a Band-Aid. He was, he allowed you to outscore teams, and cover up what's happening in that midfield or not happening in that midfield in defense. And, they have to fix that this offseason. And it's not just, Giancarlo Gonzalez showed it. It's not, you can't just go out and buy any old veteran and say, go in there and do the job, because it doesn't work that way. He was the worst player on the field.
In the wrong position.
In the wrong position, fair. But, That's part of what's broken culturally with this team. Like, if Bob Bradley gets a young player, that player improves. Bob trusts him. That player goes out there. That player plays.
Tristan Blackman. I was going to say, just say the name. It's Tristan Blackman in this game.
Like, he's a second-year player. He was drafted as a fullback. He started as a center back in the playoffs against Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And, he was good. We see what happened with Latif Blessing. Like, the Galaxy have to start doing that. You can't spend your way out of every problem. They need to have learned that lesson, really, over the past half decade.
I don't disagree with you. I would say that most of the guys that completely underperformed or looked like they didn't belong to be on the field were signed before Dennis DeClosa became a part club. Giancarlo Gonzalez, not one of them, but... You already had seven center backs on the roster. What were you going to do about him? So I would be shocked to see five or six of these names even on the team next year that you saw in the starting lineup
Plus
today.
Plus, if that front line next year is Pavone, Alessandrini, and Chicharito in the middle, they'll score 150 goals. So there you go.
Will Zlatan be back? Do you think he will be back?
Do you want to read the tweet?
Sure. Zlatan going Zlatan after tonight's game. On whether it was his last in MLS, quote, it's not about money. I have another 2 months. That's on his contract. We will see what happens. Then, if I stay, MLS is good because the whole world will watch it. If I don't stay, nobody will remember what MLS is. And I think he's mistaking himself for David Beckham.
It also sounds like it might be about money. It also sounds like it might be amount of money.
Yeah.
Because that's the type of thing you say
when you
say, if you want people to watch you, pay me more money. I don't think it is. And from people I've talked to around the LA Galaxy, they don't think he's going to play soccer anywhere else. They feel like he's going to live in LA. That's kind of where he's going with this whole thing. The question is if he plays or not. And it seemed like he didn't do the pregame interview with ESPN, and he seemed a little, not rattled, but annoyed. And Taylor Twellman tweeted out and said, one of the Galaxy representatives said, he's been like this all week. I think some people took that as he's locked in, but I took it as he's just kind of a bit annoyed with the whole thing and the way maybe the season's gone. And you could say there's a million arguments you can make in a million different directions. One is, he's done everything he can. The team hasn't put a good team around him. Why should he spend more time trying to make this better? You could also say that he came, he saw, he conquered. He didn't win a championship, but he's been one of the three best scorers in the league over the last 2 years after he blew out his knee and came back in a new place and did all that. So nothing would surprise me, but if you're asking me to put, you know, a guess on somewhere, I'd say he's not playing soccer next year.
I think you're wrong about that. But anyway, I got to ask you guys both this. What grade do you give Guillermo Barros-Schelotto for this year?
Now, there are extenuating circumstances, and those circumstances are Zlatan. And anytime you are managing a team with Zlatan, that is a very, very real. I'm going to say it's a limiter on what you can do, both with Zlatan and with the players around him. Now, I would not give him any higher than a B minus, I think.
Why?
I think his whole job was to construct something behind Zlatan that wasn't just a complete sieve, and it was.
Mm-hmm.
You had to find a way to get some semblance of organization. You had enough, especially when Pavone came in, special players to do a three-man game in attacking sense, which can work with Zlatan and Pavone and fill in the blank, even if it's Antuna in Major League Soccer. You just have to find a way to get your bit part players or the guys that you picked up and maybe don't fit for Dennis DeClosa. Maybe we'll never be back, but who cares? It might be Zlatan's last year. You're the Galaxy. You got to go out and win some semblance of organization and structure and competency defensively to get a better than a B-minus grade in this sense. He's an experienced coach. He's done it before. He's been in championships, which I know he's had more talent at Boca Juniors, but he's played in this league. The Crew, when he played for them, if I remember correctly, you remember
they were not
some expansive team. He was a difference maker. Mm-hmm. He made the attacking players around him better.
It was Ziggy Ball. Yeah, it was 4-4-1-1. He played a completely free role. They had Ali Moreno as the center forward, just dragging defenders around.
It's just too open. You had an opportunity to kind of almost create two structures. One is just Zlatan and whoever the hell is up there, and the rest is the rest of the team, and guys just dig in.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Get in your blocks. Don't let teams have easy goals. And this team, I'm just going to make a guess, other than FC Cincinnati, probably gave up the most, like, oh my God, what? Goals?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
That's inept. Like, what?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I agree with you. I think a B-minus is probably a good grade.
Yeah, probably.
For what's gone on. And I think there's...
I love Guillermo, so...
I
felt bad going lower than
that. And part of the Zlatan conversation is I'm fascinated to see what he does if Zlatan doesn't return. Like, what do the LA Galaxy look like under his vision, the way he builds it after he's had a little bit of time? But I don't know that he was that creative with formations to say, like, I got to figure something out. We'll make the postseason, but here's my 4 weeks to test this, and here's my 2 weeks to test this. And I think in places you mentioned, for Bob Bradley, a young guy will learn and get better. Where did we see that, right? Julian Araujo played well, and then all of a sudden, Rolf Fletcher is the difference maker. Now Giancarlo Gonzalez is your right back. He had three incredible central midfielders. They could never really control games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why was that not
That's
the tactic?
Weird, right?
Let's just see if we can get our foot on the ball, and that will be our defending, is we'll control games. So I agree with Weeby. I think a lot of it, unfortunate, wasn't good enough from him, but it'll be interesting to see in year two if he doesn't have Zlatan, how he chooses to play, how his team
you can kind of understand
plays.
Why it was in some ways too, because sure. It was like the island of misfit toys in a lot of ways. All these different teams that failed, and then they come in, you have Zlatan, your Galaxy,
you lose Alessandrini,
you have expectations that are always over the maybe the capability of the team, especially in this era and where they've been. To close, I had 1 year. I think you got to start judging them on next year, especially if there's no Zlatan. You better have had a plan, and I expect that they do. We'll see what that plan is. Before we move on to Union Atlanta, I want to know what you think of Bob Bradley's little thing, his little response. Sebi Salazar, who I really respect as a journalist. I love Sebi. I think he does a great job. I think in a lot of ways he's the future of broadcasting in the U.S. with the bilingual aspect of it, with Mexico and the U.S. and Liga MX and MLS all kind of being mashed up into one place. He was very dogged in his questioning about Carlos Vela and whether Carlos Vela had finally stepped up in a big game, and Bob was incredulous, and perhaps rightly so in the moment. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you think?
It was one person's job to ask obvious questions that everyone in the world is thinking. It's another person's set up there to answer those questions. I don't think anything that Sebi Salazar asked was ridiculous. I mean,
he asked the question he had to ask.
And he asked the question everyone else
was
asking.
And he asked it respectfully.
Yeah. And he set Bob up to say, there's no chance anyone could say what you just said anymore. He was phenomenal tonight. He's been phenomenal all season. He's MVP of Major League Soccer. He's the best player this league's ever seen, and he's going to go win an MLS Cup. Yeah. It was that simple. But it was fun the way it happened.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bob's not stupid. Bob knows what good TV is. Bob knows everybody in that locker room is going to see that, see him sticking up for
That's what
his,
it felt like to me.
Yeah, see him sticking up for his best player, the heartbeat of the team.
Messi.
Yeah. The MLS Messi. Like, I'm not saying, like, I am certain Bob's emotion in that moment, because you can see he loves Carlos Vela. I'm certain that emotion was real, but I think it was somewhat calculated. For the to make that a moment, say like, see, they're always going to be asking this about us. Let's go kick, let's go kick Seattle's ass. Let's go win MLS Cup. Let's go let's shut everyone up forever. That's what that was.
I like it. If that's what it was, I like it. I enjoyed it. Look, there's an ESPN, just ESPN notification that goes out after that. You don't see that for. They didn't get that for the win, I don't think. Like, let's just, if that's what it takes, man, like, you have all the historical rants, it's not there, but you know how I feel about this league sometimes. Give me some flavor, man. Give me some flavor, and Bob Bradley absolutely did it. LAFC are moving on. They are the lone number one seed remaining. They just got to win one game, and if they do that, MLS Cup will be in Los Angeles at Bank of California Stadium.
We're going to talk about it on Monday, because we're going to preview the games.
That's the nice thing, is Monday comes, and we can really dive into Seattle LAFC.
Can I just throw something out there?
Sure, sure.
I would be shocked if Seattle won that game. I think that it's going to be more comfortable than the game we just watched.
This is the third
and
time
And on that
so
note,
far,
tune in on Monday.
That producer Anders, a noted Seattleite. Is that the right phrasing for that, Anders? Seattle-ish person who's, yeah. He's not happy with us. That's fine. We're not here to please you, Anders. Let's talk Atlanta-Philly. Atlanta do what they do. They win at home in the playoffs in single elimination games. That's 8 in a row so far this year. U.S. Open Cup, Campeones Cup, into the Audi 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. Couple shutouts, Philadelphia. Great season. Talent gap. Better players.
Yeah.
Bigger moments.
Well, we also had this thing where it's like Philly have, 11 great players. They're a great group, which means they don't rely on one person. But unfortunately, that also meant if anyone got hurt, they were behind the eight ball, and you're not going to go in a scenario where you have all 11 guys healthy for every playoff run. Jozy Altidore, Omar Gonzalez are out, right? Walker Zimmerman and Marc-Anthony Kay are out. So you're always going to have injuries.
Miles Robinson and Michael Parkhurst.
Exactly.
Now, I'm not saying
we neglected to mention Lee Wynn in that previous. Like, Marc-Anthony Kay was out. Lee Wynn came in and
had
three assists.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's decent.
Philly doesn't have that.
Yeah. Former MVP candidate.
Well, they do. Marco Fabian, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it felt like in watching this game, Brendan Aaronson had a huge moment early in the game, and Brad Guzan makes a phenomenal save. But as you watch this game, it was hard to see where the goal was going to come from for Philly. And I don't think it's a knock on them to go on short rest, to go on the road, to play at Atlanta, to still, I think, try and play your soccer at times. One of the things that was frustrating for me was felt like there were moments where they broke out when Atlanta pressed them in tight spaces, or when they won a ball that Atlanta didn't expect, and they were slow in transition.
Yeah.
It's like they wanted to hold up and play in possession, and on the road in a playoff game in that moment, at some point you just had to try and be aggressive, especially against that Atlanta line.
It felt to me like when those moments happened, guys were looking up or guys were trying to figure out what they're going to do, and they just didn't know, or the spacing wasn't right, or, you know, Fafa Biko picks up the ball and he's like, oh, well, crap, there's two guys in front of me and my teammates are all the way across the field. I don't have numbers. I don't have anybody to combine with. I would have to go 1v1, and then he didn't do that. And the, like, they just, it felt like in those moments they kind of froze up. It was like, ah, crap, okay, recycle the ball, possess, and Atlanta's like, cool, we'll just – We're getting our numbers back.
Yeah,
we got you.
The line sight. No, for sure. And I think two things. Like, one, Alejandro Bedoya, I mean, clearly suffering the effects of that injury. He couldn't complete a pass over 10 yards. And, like, it looked like Atlanta figured that out real quick. And they knew whenever he, like, what Philadelphia liked to do is get you crammed on one side and then switch the field of play. And then take advantage of all that open space. Well, one of your, you know, two kind of deeper lying midfield, I know they played diamond for most of this game, but one of your two deeper lying midfielders can't switch the ball, like, that's a problem. And then the other thing is Harris Madunian had a shocker. And I think, so, like, a lot of credit there to Atlanta United, but also, like, Harris Madunian kind of ran down. He played
every single minute of the entire season.
And he wasn't great the last two games of the regular season. He was really good against the Red Bulls, over 120 minutes. And it looks like it just added up. And, like, he's usually so crisp with those passes, and not just the switches, but, like, playing, you know, across his hips and, like, between the lines and finding guys in the half space.
Which is where Montero gets you unexpected, and then he turns, and now they're through.
Yeah. And Philadelphia didn't have that all night. And then that's combined with just, like, Santos and Pico don't have the same type of gravity that Shabilko does. If Shabilko's playing as that number, and we saw it, like, the game against Atlanta that they won, Shabilko was everywhere, dragging that defense all around, open up spaces for Elsinho, for Aronson, for, like, anyone to just dive in and run at that Atlanta. They didn't have that tonight.
Yeah, I was surprised that he went with the two up top. Just because it took away, I think.
Who's his boss?
Agreed. Understood. But he already won the playoff game. Going into this one, it just felt like the more questions you made that Atlanta backline that's never played together, never played in those positions answer, the better you were going to be. And it was too straightforward for Atlanta because they knew where Pico and Santos were going to be. They knew it was going to be the balls into the channel. They were going to try and run it down and pull it back for an on-running center mid or try and hit the other one on the far post. And it just made it too easy for a scenario in which basically no one along that back line, maybe Escobar kind of, was playing in their standard position. So that was a little frustrating. I understand it worked against Red Bull, and I understand what you're saying as well in terms for Jim Curtin of what type of risk do you want to take, not just in winning the game, but how your organization is managing itself. But that made it, I think, a little bit too simple for Atlanta United.
Atlanta fans right now are like, am I taking crazy pills? Why are we talking about the Union? We just worked them 2-0. Like, Joseph Martinez banged in left-footed and, like, you know, went alpha dog at the very end. Pity Martinez started to shock everybody. I know somebody on the pregame show was like, no way, this dude's not going to, he's not going to, he won't play the rest of the year. And here he is starting, here he is finding Julian Gressel.
Name names, Ben.
With a blind, like, beautiful ball that Gressel chips in, and Andre Blake a little bit lost on that one, you know, whatever, whatever.
It's a great finish.
It is, it's an incredible finish.
At full speed to chip from 18 yards out off the crossbar.
Sam Stachel tweeting out that we knew that Miles Robinson had a new contract, that he will make an average of, like, $635,000 over the next 3-4 years. Julian Gressel.
Yeah, he's getting paid.
You best come to that man with a bag, because he has been a key. And you got those two guys in the same super draft. I mean, think about, and I talk about this all the time, like, when I think about Sporting Kansas City, Benny and I were talking about this, and I was like, Peter Vermees laid the foundation for 10 years of magnificence with a super draft, which we all thought you couldn't ever do again. And Atlanta United might well have done that in a certain way by getting two guys that they could build around literally for the next decade. It's incredible. Pity Martinez, is this a he's back moment, or is this a it's a flash in the pan moment? Is this a that was decent?
You can't bench him after this.
You can't say anything definite after what we've seen this year, where he has these games or these runs, and then all of a sudden he's benched for a playoff game and doesn't get off the bench. There's no way you could say anything definite because it's all been flash in the pan this year. Maybe it won't be in his MLS career. I think he has the quality to be a consistent performer, but how can you know? What has any one of these players shown you? The one thing I will say, and we've been saying this about Atlanta for a while, if they score first or they score early, it's a different game. There's two games they play. They come out, they play high energy, they try and create chances. 20 minutes in, if they don't score, they freak out. And then it's 60 minutes of throwing everything and eight guys making runs and every ball into the box until Joseph creates something or something happens. But if they score early, then you can take the ball if you want because we'll hit you on the counter. We feel comfortable. There's no stress on us. The crowd's into it. Everyone's fun. We're the best team in the world. And Uncle Arthur's up there just smiling over it all. There are two different scenarios that happen. This was exactly what they needed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have... I mean, that was it.
Can't say it better.
Can't say it better than
playoff
David Goss.
Playoff performance, David
Can't
Goss.
Say it better than David. It's wild, though. I mean, let's give credit to Frank DeBoer and to the players, because like Mikey Ambrose had 250 minutes this year, hadn't played since July. Florentin Pogba, at times...
He had three... It's an instant replay. He had three adventures, let's call it.
Yeah.
In the penalty area, where he's grabbing guys, he's just like hip checking dudes.
Was he the one that clotheslined El Seno at the end of the game?
He did. He did. Yeah, exactly. He clotheslined El Seno. He pulled down Sergio Santos, and he just like clumsy baby deered into Fafa Pico. And none of them Ismael Alfath even looked at twice.
Yeah, my girlfriend told me today that she thinks he's the best referee in MLS.
I like that your girlfriend has referee takes.
I don't know how she even knows.
I was going to say I'm going to aspire to that.
Yeah.
That's probably not going to be in the future.
On the DeBoer thing, we may have mentioned it last show, but he shifted to the 4-3-3 that created the goal against New England, which was everything they needed because it wasn't obvious that it was coming. And I agree that, once again, he came out here today and he made the right decisions. He sat Justin Miram, who didn't need it, I guess, to go safe with Ambrose, to have him suck in alongside Pogba and then allow Gressel to roam that right side. And one of the things that I like about their five-man back line, you saw it at times once again, is Escobar can make attacking runs from inside of Gressel. He can overlap or he can come under and create space, and it drives opposing defenses nuts because no one knows who's following him. And I think Nagby reads it well and follows him at times to create openings. Otherwise, it's just Escobar himself. It opens up Gressel. It's, I think, been one of the best reasons they've gone there, not just the safety defensively, but the ability to throw a curveball in the attack. And at this point, it doesn't seem like Parkhurst is coming back. We don't know if Robinson's going to be back. So you expect to see a pretty similar setup going forward against Toronto.
Toronto will threaten them more, though. Now, Toronto's wing play has not been, how do I put this?
It's been pretty good.
It's been all right.
Yeah.
But like, Sebastián Endo is not going to get isolated with Mike Ambrose and be like, I'm going to tear you up, man. Here
spicy
I come for you.
Sebas is really good off the ball, but he's not going to beat anybody on it.
Right, right. We'll see.
Did you see him back heel one in the middle of the NYCFC box?
Benizé has his moments as well, but no, it remains to be seen if those are the guys who can, like, you're going on the road to Atlanta, the defending champions, the team that beat Club America this year, the team that already hoisted the U.S. Open Cup this year, the team with second best player in the league. It takes a lot to beat a team like that on the road in the playoffs. It takes a lot. And if they had Josie, if Omar Gonzalez was 100% healthy, then it'd be like, yeah, Toronto's not going to be scared. They have some stuff they can do. You know they're going to cause Atlanta problems. It's a really good shot. With Josie, maybe 30 minutes fit at best, it's tough to see a path.
He's PJ fit. He was in New York City. He just wasn't, it seems, with the team. Here's a question from Wesley
Perron. He was at the game.
He was, but he was
grabbing a Knish on the upper deck.
Nice.
Queens, nice. Baby. Yeah,
you were loving that. Queen. You were loving that. You're like, City Field is my home.
I was vibrating
throughout
that game.
Exactly. How was it, by the way?
It was a lot of fun. It filled up well, and it's the fans are closer to the field, also a bit more vertical. They gave out the flags, the towels, so I felt like I was at Game 7 of the 2006 NLCS once again.
I thought you were going to say World Series.
I didn't go to that.
No.
I didn't remember.
They didn't go to Game 7.
The Mets lost both these things, right. So you don't have to troll me.
Was the vibe, because I assume we're moving on now.
So, no, I don't want to go all the way there. I want to pull it back. Can I ask this question first. From Wesley Perron?
Yeah, do this first.
We'll go back. If Atlanta wins MLS Cup, will they have had a better season than LAFC?
That's an interesting question.
Even if you say, you know what, Campione's Cup,
get it
out of here.
Are we counting that?
We are counting it. And there is like a little bit of a, you know, you have to take it into consideration.
October 25th, 2:47 a.m. Super Cup. That's when it happened. Yeah. Campione's Cup arrived.
I mean, they beat Club America. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Would they have a better season than LAFC? Could they say that? Overall season.
Oh, Atlanta fans will definitely say that. Are you kidding?
Well, I said, can they say that? No, yeah, for sure. No, for sure.
They should not, but they will. LAFC did it over the course. It's a supporter shield versus MLS Cup argument. I mean, that.
Did I convert you? Are you a supporter shield truther?
No, but what LAFC did was different than just winning the supporter shield. It was breaking records. It was doing it with style. It was Carlos Vela the way he played. It was everything they
But what
done.
If you go back to back after losing Tata and Miguel Almirón?
Well, it doesn't make them not a great club. They've won MLS Cup. They get to celebrate everything they want. It could just be this one potential argument that they don't get to beat home, which I guarantee will be the only thing they want to talk about.
Exactly. Grim Reaper time for the Union. We've kind of gone over their performance, but I want to talk about the future here. Will Jamiro Montero be back? Well, Matthew DeGeorge tweeted this, Ernst Tanner on the permanent move. Quote, that's what we already tried. It was unsuccessful. We've been focusing on other guys as well. I think we'll get a real good team. If all the solutions work out that we're working on, then we'll have a real competitive team. There is an if in that clause from him. Jim Curtin on Montero. Jamiro is a special player. Obviously, he's a guy we can see as a franchise building around because he's that talented, that special. What do they need to do this offseason if they want to take that step forward? You guys said on Matchday Central that they're kind of in a strange position because they have guys that are aging out, let's say. Like, you know, come on, your attacking strategy here was to bring El Seno off the bench. Like, that was literally it. Like, every game is like, well, let's get to 60, and then El Seno's coming, baby. I mean, and that's fine, and it worked. You finished third in the East, but it's not long-term. It's short, maybe medium-term. How do you start to go both short-term success next year, a step forward, maybe being in a position where people think, oh, yeah, this, they can go toe-to-toe with Atlanta. Yeah, they can beat Atlanta and maybe do, and also long-term building of the Union. Mark McKenzie stepped up, although he had a tough moment in this game.
I really don't have an answer for you. I mean, you need individual improvement from some of the guys who are younger, like McKenzie. Elliott was really good this year, so it's hard to say that. Kai Wagner. But it's... For them, it's going to be the players in their academy getting better. It's going to be Brendan Aaronson being a better player. It's going to be Seth Kuhn or Mishi Galina or someone coming out of their academy being the next player that steps up like Aaronson and being a star player.
That right back that they had?
No, he's like a second forward, first forward type guy.
Don't they need a difference maker here? Like Marco Fabian was supposed to be that guy. And they like this to me in this game, Fafa Picot was not that guy. Sergio Santos was not that guy.
But we do this. We say, you're a DP, you're a name, blah, blah, blah. We did this with Sam Johnson. We just had this conversation. Marco Fabian, they got for no transfer fee. It was a flyer. They hoped it worked. It didn't work.
It did. He got them the goal.
Okay, fair. It did work. But he's not Carlos Vela.
Fair.
And he's not going to be Carlos Vela. And he probably got...
I'm not even talking Carlos Vela. I'm talking like Luis Diaz.
Yeah, okay. He's not that guy. There was a reason no one paid a transfer fee for this guy.
That's true.
There's a reason he was available. When you take things off a scrap heap, at some point, you have to answer why it was on the scrap heap.
They need Aaronson to take a big step forward. They need him.
He's
like,
good. He's a good player.
He's good. They need him to be a killer in the final third because like that's his future. Like he's not going to be a defensive midfielder. He's not going to be a box to box guy. He's going to be like a 10 or an attacking playmaking winger. If you're going to be that, you have to produce goals and assists. He needs to take a big step forward. They need to get Shabilko healthy. They need to hope that Santos had, I think, 4 or 5 goals across 6 or 7.
I thought he was really good the last month.
Yeah. So, like, keep him healthy. See if he can add more as well. And then, like, you got to go out and you got to make that splash on one high-end DP. Maybe it's a center forward. Maybe it's a second forward. Maybe it's a pure playmaker. Something like that.
It feels to me like it is, and I know Nacho Piatti is a high, high bar to reach, but it's kind of that guy who is not a 10. He's not a forward. He can create chances off the wing. He can come inside. He can score maybe 10-ish goals. Mm-hmm. He's a threat. People have to.
A Johnny Russell type.
Yeah, he's a gravity player. People have to pay attention to him. People have to come respect him because then Shabilko's better than Aaronson has an opportunity as a 19-year-old to be a killer. It's asking a lot of him to be that player.
Can I just say, we talk about development and what's happening and all these things. Brendan Aaronson's 19 years old?
Just turned 19, yeah.
He played in front of 60,000 people against the reigning South American Player of the Year, Darlington Nagbe, Jeff Laurentiis, in central midfield on national television. That wasn't something we could provide young players with 10 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago. So whatever you think about whatever is going on, there's some positives about what's happening because the experience he had there's no other way that you can set a player up like that, and he's only 19 years old, and he's only going
to
get better.
It took a world-class save from Brad Guzan to keep him off the board in this one. Union are out. You know what that means with this field? Seattle Sounders are going to the CONCACAF Champions League. They've got the Fever and Puget Sound, baby. All five teams locked in, already thinking about next February in the middle of the night here as we sip. Brown Liger, where are you headed?
He's going to get the scythe.
Oh.
He wants to do a...
No, I was going to get the...
Oh, you can get the scarf.
He's going to get the scarf. Yeah, we shamed producer Anders with that one.
Down the south.
Hey, man, 2-0. RSL go down. RSL on the road. Not generally a better's choice, let's say. Just on the odds there. I've kind of said recently that I didn't think the Sounders... There was something missing, I felt. And I still think there is something missing. I said, oh, this is a good team. It's not a great team. They were maybe a great team early in the season. Haven't been since. Have been closer to that with Jordan Morris at his best. But here they are with 11 straight playoff wins at home, with 3 or 4 years in the conference finals. They may not be a great team in a long-term 40-game sense, but in the playoffs, they don't have to be.
Well,
they just have to have the gamers that they have and take advantage of the opportunities.
You're also combining different things. They have been a great team.
This year.
No. But you said over the last...
No. They've definitely been a great team over the last decade or whatever. Right. I'm saying right here, this moment, right now.
No, they can't... They don't decide the way games are played. Mm-hmm. At home in the postseason against the seventh seed and a team in RSL that people, let's be honest, thought were lucky to be a 3 seed, for 3 of the 4 regular halves that were played, not including extra time, they didn't decide the way the game was played. RSL came out and they dictated possession in the first half, not because Seattle decided to sit deep, because that's the way the game was played. Now, RSL didn't have the difference makers to create the opportunities they needed to create, and Seattle did, in the end, go back the other way, and RSL doesn't put a guy on the near post. This is my camera, right? Guys on near posts on corner kicks. Cool. And they take a 1-0 lead, and then space opens up.
And you don't mark him?
And Ladero gets open. But, once again... Seattle didn't decide the way this game was played, and now you're going to go play LAFC, and that's just, I think, a reality of who they've been this season, which is they have the talent to match anyone. They have the depth, arguably, as much as anyone in Major League Soccer, but the way they play out there on the field is reacting to what's happening and just having talent get them over the line.
But you could also argue that this is what they should have been doing the whole time. Once they lost Chad Marshall and once they kind of lost that ability to defend on the front foot, it kind of made sense for Seattle to say, all right, you take it. We're going to hang back here, let you open yourself up, and when you make a mistake...
Mercer Island Zion is out on the
break. Mercer Island Zion. Charlie loves some Jordan Morris, man. between Morris, Ruiz Diaz, and Ladero, and like one or two overlapping fullbacks, which is weird for a team that sits back. They have both their fullbacks overlap at times. That's what they should be doing, because they're not like this like free flowing dynamic team that they were at their best. From 2014 through the second half of last year. Like, second half of last year, they were unreal. Ozzy's gone. Gustav Svensson's awesome, but he's a different kind of defensive midfielder, as is Christian Roldan. Chad Marshall's gone. There is no replacing that. Arriaga, Kim Keehee, Roman Torres, they're not, none of them is Chad Marshall. Like, you can't be as open. And so, like, why try? Why not absorb? Let LAFC play the beautiful soccer. Let Toronto or Philly or, whoever else try to play beautiful soccer. Sounders don't have to do that anymore. They have won the Supporters Shield doing that. They have made conference finals doing that. I think they would rather have a second MLS Cup, and I do think that this gives them their best chance at that.
Ruiz Diaz, Ladero, Morris, Roldan. They have the pieces. They can do this. It doesn't matter if people think they're good or great or whatever the hell. Like, Brian Schmetzer doesn't care.
Yeah, I would go back to similar to the conversation we had with the Revs in Atlanta, which was they have the match winners up front, but how far will they be behind when those guys hit the net? Like, if you sit in a block with this team, LAFC is going to be able to pull them apart. LAFC is going to create chances.
I mean, FC Dallas did that.
Exactly. So... That was why I feel so comfortable in saying I believe
LSU. We're going to preview this much more. Sounders fans are like, give us some friggin' respect. We've been doing it for a long time, and you should get it. This is one of the most successful clubs in the last
that
decade
part,
plus.
That part should not be disagreed with in the span they've had now.
It's unreal.
When you look at the DC
string.
United, the Dynamo, Revs, sort of, but they could never actually win one. Those, like, spells, LA Galaxy.
It's open cups. It's a shield. Yeah. It's MLS Cup. It's MLS Cup appearances.
It's like 50 points. I think 8 of the last 9 years.
They have the best record over the last decade.
Yeah,
for sure.
Also, how cool would it be if they hosted Toronto FC
and did it again? I don't know if I can take that. I don't know if I want that.
It won't be as cold.
Yeah, that's what I say. It would be better than Toronto. No doubt about that. We will preview.
Don't even disrespect the six.
I love the six, but it was
This is why you can't invite him. This is why
cold.
I go to Toronto.
Although it's a month advance, so maybe it would be better. Everton and Leeds chucked out of this one. RSL didn't have the difference makers. Didn't even have players that were attempting to be the difference makers, it seemed.
Justin Glad was the most adventurous, incisive passer on the field.
Oh, actually, I have one thing before we go to RSL. This was a good one from Michael D. Dwyer on Twitter. Doesn't it seem like the Sounders are to this decade of MLS what the Dynamo were to the 2000s? Do you agree with that? Do you see any? No.
No, because the Dynamo were the Quakes, and they won Cup in 01 and 03. They won the Shield with over 2 points per game in 05. Then they went to Houston, became the Dynamo, and won Cup in 6 and 7.
And then lost a couple in the...
9.
No,
not
10
9.
And 11.
No,
10 and 11.
But that's later on.
Yeah, it's a different group. It is, but it's still a continuation. I mean, it's a different group Sounders-wise.
11 and 12,
like,
rather.
Years.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Like, it's just a continuation of good management and like an understanding of who you want to be.
Yeah.
That Quakes slash Dynamo team of the aughts was... Like, they won.
Yeah. They were the team that everyone was chasing every year.
Yeah.
Seattle's been involved every year.
Yeah.
But they were chasing Toronto. They were chasing Red Bulls.
They were chasing Galaxy at the start.
Yeah. And now LAFC.
Yeah.
Let's talk RSL real quick. Nick Romano's last game. We had some people say, you know, subject of this email is name the goalkeeper of the year award after Nick Raimondo. This is not from an RSL fan. He says, despite never winning the award, Nick has been the most stalwart goalkeeper ever, in my humble opinion, so much so that his name became a verb. Many a game has the team I supported been gloriously and infuriatingly Raimondo'd. Perry in Portland says, so can you name an award for someone who didn't win it but should have at least twice? We've got the Siggy Schmidt Coach of the Year, the Landon Donovan MLS MVP. The currently All-State Goalkeeper of the Year, which went to Vito Manone of Minnesota United, be the Nick Raimondo Goalkeeper of the Year? Or is that just too much for a guy who'd never won it?
I mean...
He has every single record.
I think...
Longevity is his.
I think it should be.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I think that if you look at the record book, if you look at what he meant to this RSL team...
They could name their goalkeeper of the year award after him.
He was ahead of his time as a goalkeeper in terms of how he used his feet, in terms of like how, like he was great. He was legitimately. I have no problem naming.
I was just checking to see how much is left in that cup and how much has already gone down the old.
Wait, you really have a problem with the idea of
naming a trophy after someone who never won it?
Yeah, but the fact that he didn't win it is like, it's less, no, it doesn't mean anything about him. It means everything about the people
that's
who
fair.
Freaking vote for
well,
them.
Well, look, Vito Manone won it this year. No disrespect to Vito.
Sorry, but
Ike won it.
But also, let's say
Ike
in.
Won two awards for Minnesota.
But in a league that's had Kevin Hartman,
did Ike play for
and
Arsenal?
Tony Meola.
He didn't.
Nice. Kevin Hartman, Tony Meola. I had one. Matt Reitz, guys who did this for a really long time also. I'm not saying that Raimondo's not better than them, but is he that far in his own echelon that the award gets named after him? For example, Landon Donovan's the greatest player in this league's history, built a lot of what this league exists on. He gets a trophy named after him.
Some people look at the Landon Donovan MVP and say, I wish they wouldn't have done that too. Everybody's going to have an opinion on that thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So. Let us know what you think. Vito Manone is the goalkeeper of the year. He, 17.67% was his average. Bill Hamid was second. Sean John after that. Brad Guzan, Matt Turner. This was not a award that was just like, no duh, slap me in the face. Who'd you guys vote for?
I voted for Bill Hamid.
Sean John was my vote.
Turner was mine.
Okay. So that kind of, that says, I think that says a lot about this season, that there are three different opinions at this table and the voting bears that out. Regardless, congratulations, Avita Mignone. The second half of the year in particular, he was very good for Minnesota United. We have some people wondering how far Minnesota should go to bring back Vito Mignone.
It should go pretty far.
Pretty far?
He should be the starting goalkeeper for their team next year.
Why would he not be back?
I don't know.
He's on loan, I believe.
Is he?
I thought he was.
I don't think so.
You didn't think so?
No. Are you just making stuff up here?
I don't know. Maybe, man. It's the middle of the night.
Yeah.
He did make 600K last year.
Is
that
radio.
Too much?
No.
Would you?
I mean,
no.
When you improve
goalkeeper
by 25 goals? Yeah, he is on loan.
I think
Weeby, man.
Yeah, you didn't bring the confidence, though. This is all on you.
None of this sounds like an apology.
All of this is. I apologize that you were offended by what you thought other people did,
mm-hmm.
and I think that you should get over it. And that apology sits with you.
I don't even know what you were saying there. By the way, some news with RSL, which we will talk about probably more on Monday. Stashko and Tenorio, the Bird Dog, and Better Call Paul. Say that Jason Kreis is going to interview for the RSL GM and head coaching job. So maybe Freddy Juarez is not going to keep this one. We shall see. Quickly, NYCFC and Toronto. One goal for NYCFC. Zero wins in the conference semis over 4 years. Toronto FC moving on without Josie, without Omar. 4 years, three conference finals. Yes, there was a really down year in the middle of that. But they had two MLS Cup appearances over that time. Maybe going to go for three here. Alejandro Pozuelo has a false nine, two goals, two huge mistakes for NYCFC. Maxime Cheneau, blind back header to nobody to Alejandro Pozuelo. He finishes it. And then Ronald Matarrita with a play that he will regret for his entire life, I think.
Yeah.
I really feel for Ronald Matarrita. In the moment, you're yelling at the TV and you're like, oh my God, how did this guy do this? It's mind-boggling. It's infuriating. NYCFC fans are going wild. They're tweeting horrible things at him, which you shouldn't do, but people definitely do. And then you see him on the field crying. You see images of him stopping his car on the way out of Citi Field and apologizing to all the hugging every single fan. You're like, oh my God, this isn't just one guy making a mistake in a game.
Nothing but respect to him for that.
This is one guy who's going to carry something for the rest of his life.
Yeah, can we start on the up?
Sure.
And then come down?
Yeah. Sorry. I felt so bad for Matarrita that I had to start there.
Toronto FC came out. They played phenomenal.
That first half, man.
I've been working here for like 5 years, and over the course, I'd say, of four of them, there's a playoff game in which Greg Vanney does something that I don't expect every single time. And every single time going into it, you're like, you know exactly what Vanney's going to do. He's not going to do anything wild. He's going to throw out exactly what you think. And it's a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2 in MLS Cup. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is Vanney's what he does. And in this game, his team didn't have the legs and they didn't have the horses to match NYCFC. And all he did was throw them off long enough to keep his team in it. And Domé Torrent talked about he made the tactical changes at halftime, which changed everything for them. But at that point, they wasted 45 minutes in which they could have been up 2-0 and TFC could have been asleep and done. And that left them in the game and allowed the space for Cheneau and Matarrita to make these mistakes. They were individual mistakes. They weren't even really forced mistakes. But the fact that Toronto FC was there and available for it to make a difference in the result goes down to Greg Vanney and his planning, and a lot purely just down to heart and like will from this TFC team. But I asked Vanney after, like, where does this rank in your wins? And he laughed because he's won MLS Cup and he's been to CCL final. But you could tell he knew, I just pulled one. Like, we just did that. And now they get a little bit healthier. They've got a legit shot in the Eastern Conference Finals. This one was short rest, playing against the best team in the Eastern Conference. What can we do? And he threw out just something different to change things. And his guys believed in him, which was huge. Tsubasa Endo's playing left back, right mid, left mid, all at the same time, while Benazee and Pozuelo were swapping at false nine. You saw Marky Delgado at times play at left wing all throughout the first half. Made no sense. And it all worked.
Yeah, it did. And he deserves a ton of credit. I also want to credit the three Toronto FC central midfielders in particular, Michael Bradley, Marky Delgado, and Jonathan Osorio. I mean, the last time the U.S. men's national team played, Weeby, you and I did the postgame show, and I was just screaming, win the freaking ball in central midfield for about 15 minutes. That was the entire depth and breadth of my analysis of that performance. And Toronto FC showed in this one, Like, I'm sure they left a bunch of NYCFC fans screaming, win the freaking ball in central midfield, because Delgado, Osorio, Bradley were all just up for it. They were first to everything. And if you do that and you set the tone physically, you can set the tone tactically as well. So you combine that with Pozuelo dropping off as that false nine, kind of overwhelmed NYCFC a little bit. And Dome was just a little bit too hesitant.
Which was bizarre for a guy who talked about is we're flexible. And I asked him about it in post-game. He didn't really get the question.
Well, post-game was a little interesting for Mr. Trump.
It was interesting. It started with him using the term they a lot. Now, I don't want to parse words completely because it's his second language.
Maybe third.
And he's started he does all of his media in it, and he's so interesting to listen to talk. He's so enthralling, engaging. He said they a lot about the quality of NYCFC. They have a great team. They should challenge for trophies
quote, unquote,
next year.
His team.
Yeah. And then he said, I have to go back to Manchester and talk to the City Football Group.
I'll read the quote?
About what's going to go on. Well, the quotes aren't exact.
Oh, aren't they?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm giving you that extra juice. And he proceeded to continuously say, this was a really hard season. No one knows. That's what he kept saying. Things that have happened that none of us know, apparently. And he said it in Spanish. He said it then in English. And then he started to rattle off. He mentioned a couple times, we're in the middle of the league in spending, which I don't know that everyone...
Doesn't seem like it would jive with, like, Matarita, with Eber coming
in.
Matarita's a TAM player, too.
For sure, but Matarita's the right fourth highest spot.
Tinnerholm's a TAM player. I think both their center backs are TAM players.
They have Jesus Medina still on it.
Sitting on the bench rotting.
Yeah. And so then, and he mentioned not having striker for a large stretch at the beginning of the year because it took them a while to get Eber. So he said, I have to go back. We have to talk about what happened this year and then see what next year could bring. I don't know what any of it means. I was surprised to hear him so strongly say that in the postgame so quickly. It took him a while to come in. It felt like maybe there had been some goodbyes happening. So we'll see what happens.
Jimmy Van Bronckhorst is rumored to be maybe the next head coach. He's just like, that's just a rumor. You know, it's like, hey, he quit Feyenoord. And people are saying he is going to City Football Group, and if he is, maybe he might go to New York City, and who knows? He had a pretty good 4 years of Feyenoord. They won their first title in their Eredivisie, first time in 18 seasons.
They're struggling this year.
Can I throw a mailbag?
Well, Giovanni's not there.
Can I throw a mailbag question out there? Is Jonathan Osorio, A, the best homegrown developed player in Major League Soccer, and B, is he the best American/Canadian player in MLS right now?
He's not technically homegrown.
Right, but he's played in their academy, plays for their first team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Richie Larea is the best player in CONCACAF right now, so the answer is no.
Fair.
I'm trying to think of who I would put up against him.
I mean, Jordan Morris has a clay.
I would say
Jordan Morris has a hat trick.
Jordan Morris is the obvious one, but I'm struggling to come up with one after that.
I would say CONCACAF, except Vela and Jonah are in the league, Vela especially, but he's better than Michael Bradley right now. He's more important. Josie's not playing. I don't know who else we're saying from the U.S. that's in Major League Soccer, and Alfonso Davies plays in Germany.
Yeah. If it's just straight up American, I mean, you could say Ike might have had a more impactful season than he did.
Okay.
Maybe even Miles Robinson, although that I think
I
less so
Robinson.
Than Ike, because he had a lot more around him than did Ike. I don't know.
Okay.
What do you think? You think Dome is going to be back, or is this it? Was this the swan song? Was this him trying to hint to everybody that, hey, you know, Girona, my hometown team, who I coached in the third division way back in the day, just fired their head coach, and maybe I'm going there?
It could be, or it could be him saying, hey, last year I spent 2 months in preseason without a center forward, and then I spent 8 weeks of the season without one. Let's try and get that done in January. That could have been the other way that was leaning.
Gotcha. Hey, City Football Group, help your boy out.
Yeah.
We could have been better. We could have done this.
But he specifically said Patrick was here. Dome was here. Dome leaves. The club goes on. The club's still here. So, I don't know.
Toronto FC, though, going to Atlanta. And we've seen some interesting things with Toronto FC in Atlanta. I specifically remember a game post-Cuva in 17 with Toronto on their way to an MLS Cup victory in which Jovinko, who's obviously no longer there, but Bradley, Josie got booed, had some things thrown. Somebody might have drank beer out of a cup that was on the field.
Still the best Major League Soccer game I've
ever
been to.
Was it insane? Fun. That was decision day, yeah?
Speed of quality. Yeah. Victor Vasquez coming off the wing.
Ooh, Victor Vasquez.
Miguel Almiron breaking through midfield. That was the best MLS game I've ever been to. The energy was like on point, it partially with the booing, but mainly just Toronto FC was the class, Atlanta thought they were, and it was Mercedes-Benz like a month and a half into opening, and that game was awesome.
Next Wednesday, Atlanta-Toronto FC, 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1, pre- and post-game shows, MLS Match Day Central. I believe, racking my brain, somebody tell me, I think we have Ike Opara in the studio, or Dax McCarty, one or the other. Tuesday, LAFC hosting Seattle, 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. That day we have Dax. Wednesday we have Ike Opara, so that'll be a really fun time. Tune in to those Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. You know where to get our content by now. And, of course, if you haven't already subscribed to Extra Time, if you made it like an hour into the show and you don't subscribe, just throw us the bone, man. Just come on. We're here. It's 3:13 a.m. in the morning. We're delivering. Yeah, I'm not crying. I'm just saying we're delivering you medium quality content.
Devin Sandoval over here.
That's true. Big Dev. Big Dev, that's another great note. I didn't even mention this.
Game.
You can't really see it. New Mexico United, Meow Wolf, beautiful jersey sent to me by the folks at USL. USL Championship, their playoffs are ongoing right now. Now, New Mexico United did get knocked out of the playoffs.
By who?
I don't. Sacramento Republic.
Yep,
future I did
MLS.
Know that. I did know that. Yeah, I did know that. So, yeah, there you have it. Let's get to just a little bit more. I have permission directly from producer Anders and everyone straight on up the line to continue to talk about soccer for as long as I would like to.
It'll
That's not
be
true.
Good
but
for
we'll,
me.
We'll make it quick. We have to talk about this.
I have to make a 6 a.m. train, so if we do two more hours, then I just can walk right on
exactly. it. Exactly. Tab Ramos looks like he got an MLS job with the Houston Dynamo. It's currently a report, but the owner, majority owner, Gabriel Brenner, has a quote in which he says he hired him. So, like, it's, you know, it's a report.
The owner is reporting it.
Yeah. Quote, we went through a very extensive search. We're very happy we hired Tab. He's the right guy for the team. In the market, he understands MLS, understands U.S. soccer. He's bilingual. He has a fantastic track record. That quote was to Mark Berman at the Fox station in Houston. I believe Mark was also the one that broke this news. So congratulations to him on horning on that MLS news side. What do we think about this? It's a good move, right move. Tab been waiting sort of for the right situation. It had seemed like he was a little bit or a lot of bit, however you want to interpret it, on the outs. At U.S. Soccer, as it came to the youth side, he had been the technical director. He was no longer that. It seemed like this was probably his final U-20 cycle, and they'd done a great job. This was the time to do it. Colorado, maybe, they said. No.
Orlando
FC
was
Dallas was rumored. Orlando was rumored. It turns out to be the Houston Dynamo. If reports and Gabriel Brenner saying that it happened.
If reports of the owner saying it's going to happen.
You know, got to hedge your bets here.
He's had a lot of success with the U.S. U-20s, three straight quarterfinals at the World Cup. You know, CONCACAF championships, I want to say. Yeah, two straight CONCACAF championships, which had never happened for the U.S. before. A lot of great players through those programs while he was there. And he was flexible. There were times where he played like a super pragmatic, low block, 4-4-2. You know, playing off the center forward, going very direct. This past cycle, he had, frankly, more talent, especially in midfield, was able to play, I think, more expansive and possession-oriented soccer. Still, I think, a little bit more, like, back to front, want to get out on the run type of stuff. But that kind of works with Houston, especially if they bring back, you know, a lot of the roster that they have now. They're not a team who you're going to expect to see, you know, 55-60% possession. So I think that works. I think, you know, obviously it's a rebuilding project. So I don't think the expectations are going to be super high next year. And I also think there's like a long-term element. Like Tab Ramos is a youth coach. Houston's a hotbed. They're sitting on oil and they have yet to drill. And hopefully
we said this about Wilmer too.
We did. Yeah. Yeah, and
he
it didn't
started
work.
With their USL team, and it did not work.
It didn't work at all, and I've heard various things about why that is. And I'm willing to guess that it'll work a little bit better under Tab. And in a best case scenario, he's their Oscar Pereja. He's a guy who builds the academy out, and also wins a couple trophies on the way.
And I think for where Houston's at in this league right now, where they stand in terms of the pecking order, this was as good a get as they were going to get. There wasn't as many times as I can say get. There wasn't, I don't think, if you start at the top of the list of all the openings and where people want, you know, what coaches you want, I don't know that Houston was at, you know, number
one. Not
the
top.
So I think I agree with you. Part of him being flexible, and it's hard with national teams, we're learning this in the reverse from Greg Berhalter, is we don't know what his identity is soccer-wise. One of the things we've seen in Major League Soccer that works is having a very strong from the ground up philosophy rather than the ability to tweak, especially for teams that are lower down in payroll, because then you are able to create differences that help you. So it'll be interesting to see how he chooses to play, the type of players they bring in. But everything Doyle said is true. And for the Houston Dynamo, it's probably going to be a little bit tough over the next 2 years. And I think you can say you brought in a guy who you're starting to build something bigger than just we're trying to make the playoffs, right? You're changing who your club is. And I think Pareja is a dream perfect example for that.
We'll see what happens with guys like Mauro Manotas, Albert Elise this offseason. This is not the lone domino for the Houston Dynamo. Yeah. There is much, much more for them. Wilmer Cabrera has news, too. He will not return to the Montreal Impact. They released that via press release. So they'll be looking for a new head coach as well. Pipa Higuain, Columbus Crew, they've parted ways. I've had this on the rundown for like a week and a half. We just haven't gotten to it. Andrew Johnson asks us, should Crew go for an old and experienced player or a young and upcoming player to replace Higuain in January?
Valeri.
I don't hate it.
I mean, it
maybe
seems
you pair
like
Valeri with a guy that he knows awfully well and has won championships with and loves Ohio and won Caleb Porter.
Yeah. And
I'm not going to say his name. He's still in the playoffs.
What happened if Columbus played Portland and Steve Clark started in goal for Portland and Diego Valeri started in central midfield for Columbus? It'd be interesting.
Well, too bad they got rid of Guzman. They could have really kept that thing going.
Yeah. Tony Chani's playing in the CPL, by the way. So check those lines, CPL. Make sure that they're straight and everything's
that's
clean.
That's the sort of reference that means we got to keep it moving.
But I'll say this. Diaz is a huge part of replacing.
He actually had a really good – and the Crew actually had a very encouraging like last 12 games.
So that's part of that replacement. Also, shout out Federico Higuain for being one of the best players in Major League Soccer history and being phenomenal.
I remember the first – he was one of the original like mid-season signings that came in. It was almost
– In 13.
Yeah, it was almost Ladero-esque where he came in and he was just like – Nah, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I'm that man. And he was chipping everybody from absurd distances. And I remember just, this is my guy.
His off the ball move.
This is my guy. Ridiculous.
There was a game they played in the postseason. It may have been Toronto. It may have been Atlanta. Where
is the 15 run?
No, I think it's 17.
Oh, later. Okay.
Where Berhalter set up with, there was basically like 30 yards with no one in it. And it was just Higuain covering sideline to sideline to just move the opposing team however he chose to. And after it, I asked, you know, the opposing coach something about it. And they were like, what are you supposed to do about that? Like, I could go watch the tape, and I still don't know how to plan for that.
Good news. Chris Wondolowski got a one-year deal, signed it with the San Jose Earthquakes. He's not a TAM player or a DP, he says. But he is back, and he's still their leading goal scorer for, like, forever and ever and ever. And, of course, going to extend his lead at the top of the all-time goal charts in Major League Soccer. Last question here, and then we'll get out of here. And I think this is the right way to end this Brown Looker special, which hasn't gone off the rails as much as previous ones. Got to say.
I think it's because Bobby's not here.
Yeah. I think quality show. Quality show, says the folks in the control room. But we also
Carlos has been
put some Brown Looker in their cups.
Minutes. Yeah.
So this one's from Tom Bogert, who does great work at MLSsoccer.com. Give him a follow at Tom Bogert. Who would look best with Mateus Almeida's hair? Doyle or Gus? Not into that one? Don't like that one?
You can't try to troll the two people next to you with the question.
Why?
Who's going to answer it?
I don't know. I thought you guys might react to it. One of you might want the hair and dislike
the I used to be a long hair.
You had long hair?
Yeah.
Like flowing?
I mean, it was the 90s, so it was kind of like grungy.
Have you ever had an earring?
No. Never had a piercing.
Mm. What's the most embarrassing thing you have had? What's like the fashion and or grooming choice that
you
regret?
At one point in time, I bought and wore a pinky ring for like 3 days, and I was like, that's not me. That's not me.
Oh, I like that.
It's a different time, Andrew. Yeah.
We need to change the Armchair Analyst logo to have that shiny pinky ring. Did you hold out the pinky, or did you kind of hide it back? Because if you have the pinky ring, anytime you put your hand out, you have to extend the pinky.
No, I kept it.
Did it have a
tight
skull on it?
It did.
Show you were
no,
bad.
It didn't have a skull. Okay. It didn't have a skull.
All right. That's it?
What do you want from me?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Okay.
You can't ask me that question because anything I say, you've probably bought right now.
We've gone an hour 10 on a brown liquor special. Like, let's wrap this up.
We're going home. We're going home. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. I know we will.
Wait, at 3:30 in the morning, you don't want to talk about front office changes for the scouting department of FC Cincinnati?
You know.
We'll do it on the train home.
For sure. You guys.
For sure. Seattle going to LAFC next Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Watch it. Conference finals in the West and the East, Atlanta hosting Toronto FC on FS1 at 8 p.m. Pre-game, post-game shows, Matchday Central, Dax McCarty, Eichel Parra, bunch of people that you know. We'll be there. This is it. We'll see you. Bye.